Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Wake up, well I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you.
All right, the bye week is behind us. Oklahoma returns to the football field Saturday morning, 11 a.m. kickoff against UFC. What's up, everybody? This is Matt Hofeld with the Sooner Nation podcast. According to ESPN's matchup predictor, Oklahoma has a 94.1% chance of taking down the 3-3 Knights of UFC. Central Florida comes in Norman 0-3 in conference play, trying to make that adjustment into the Big 12. Has not gone swimmingly for them. Meanwhile, the Sooners, number six in the nation, 6-0 on the season, 3-0 in Big 12 play, coming off of a bye week that was preceded by the big win in the Red River rivalry. Here's four things just off the top of the podcast here that we want to look at in terms of this game, and four things really to watch for against UFC. Now, we got much more to break this game down, but I think we need to start by looking at these four specific topics. I think this is going to be a fun game. I don't know that this is going to be the 70-14 thrashing that a lot of Oklahoma fans really want after flexing your muscle in Dallas 2 weeks ago. But I think it can be a comfortable win for Oklahoma, but yet at the same time, a little bit of a challenge and a little bit of fun in the mix of the game. And I think it starts by comparing these two running games, or the two rushing attacks. UFC actually comes into this game with the third best running game, running attack, whatever you want to say, in the nation. The Knights are averaging 246.3 yards per game on the ground, and they've scored 14 rushing touchdowns on the season. Now, that's more than they've thrown for, with 12 touchdowns coming through the air. And when you look at the losing streak in conference play, they've lost three in a row. They're still averaging 193 yards per game on the ground and 5.4 yards per carry during that three-game stretch of Big 12 losses. And you compare that to an Oklahoma defense that's limiting opponents to just 3.29 yards per carry, 113.7 rushing yards per game on the ground. Oklahoma ranks number 28th nationally in limiting opponents on the ground, and they've only allowed one rushing touchdown this season. So you're and that came against Texas, by the way. You probably already knew that, but you're looking at an offense that thrives on running the football, and a defense that really has thrived at limiting what their opponents can do on the ground, in as much in six games they've only allowed one rushing touchdowns. Now you flip sides of the field and you've got a different story. You got UFC 246.3 yards per game on the ground against an Oklahoma offense that's only averaging a little bit under 164.8 yards per game on the ground. And the Sooners averaging 4 yards a carry, at 4.08, but 4 yards per carry. Now, they've equaled UFC's 14 rushing touchdowns on the season, but what Oklahoma has as its advantage here is 18 passing touchdowns. You've got an offense that's not just balanced, but you've got an offense that can score balanced and score more regularly than what UFC is going to come at them with. And then you look at, finally, the final component of this topic, I guess, and that's going to be the UFC defense, where you've got an advantage if you're the Knights. You've got an advantage with what you've done through the six games on the ground as opposed to what your opponent has done through six games on the ground. But you've got a massive disadvantage if you're UFC and what your defense is allowing opponents to do. The Knights are allowing 197.2 yards per game, almost 5 yards per carry, 4.95 on the ground, and they've allowed 15 rushing touchdowns through 2023. When you look at the defensive stats for UFC, what you're finding is that opponents are attacking this team on the ground. On average, 197.3 is what they're giving up on the ground. 189.8 is what they're giving up through the air. Opponents are going to the ground more frequently against this UCF team than they are going at them through the air. I don't think it's because they're great through the air defensively, though. I think it's because they're so susceptible to what opponents can do on the ground. If you look at the Kansas game, they lost that game 51-22. Kansas passed for 169 yards, ran for 202. And so that's just the latest example of how teams are choosing to attack this UCF defense. So I think that's the first thing you got to look at. I think the second thing you want to look at is what Oklahoma's continuing to build defensively, particularly with red zone defense. Now, there were doubters, and there still are doubters, and there's probably always going to be those guys out there who try to explain away success from a team that they've tried to, here's a good example. You look at all the people that picked Oklahoma to lose to Texas. Now they're not coming back and saying, well, we were wrong. They're coming back and saying, well, we weren't right. We weren't wrong in our assessment about Oklahoma. It's just that Texas didn't play to the capabilities that we thought that they could. You know, and how many times have you seen it out there that, and not just from homers that wear the burnt orange, but I'm talking about from other media outlets are just saying, yeah, you know, Texas played their C game against Oklahoma's A game. And it spews ignorance, because if you saw that Oklahoma game, there's no way you would call that an A game. There's no way you can have a punt blocked and returned for a touchdown and say, yeah, they played their A game. No, it's not happening. But one thing that did kind of silence some of the doubters in this with this Oklahoma defense was what they did on that goal line stand when they shut down Texas 4 shots into the end zone. And don't let a 3-3 record fool you in terms of what Central Florida's coming in here to do offensively. They rank 4th nationally in total offense. They're 516.7 yards per game. So this is a team that can move the football, but they're also 28th in touchdowns scored. So you got a top 4 offense, top 28 scoring team, meaning at some point in here, there's a disconnect and capping off those drives with getting into the end zone. 26 total touchdowns for UCF through 6 games. Now you've got an Oklahoma defense that overall total defense, they're number 52 nationally. 352.8 yards per game is what they're allowing through the first 6 games. Now, they flexed again in the red zone against Texas, and the reality is they're top 3 nationally once their opponents get inside the 20-yard line. And so, again, when you look at the trends, you've got an offense that scores points, you've got an offense that moves the ball but struggles at times to score points, going up against a defense that allows yards but doesn't necessarily allow points. They've only given up 7 touchdowns through the first 6 games. And that's a telltale sign of, it's that bend but don't break mentality. Yeah, maybe you're giving up 516 yards per game. Maybe you're cranking out 516 yards per game. But if you're not scoring very frequently, that 516 yards doesn't really matter. That same concept moves over to the defensive side of the ball. You're allowing your opponents 350 yards per game, which isn't bad, by the way. In today's era of offensive football, that's not bad. But, you get 350-plus yards per game, but if you've only allowed 7 touchdowns on the season, that's just over 1 touchdown per game, and you've played 6 games, you've given up 7 touchdowns. Again, those yards don't matter if your opponent's not getting into the end zone. And that's what needs to continue to happen on Saturday. That needs to be a theme for this game on Saturday. Here's a big thing as about something that's been talked about heavily during the bye week is, will there be a post-Red River rivalry hangover? Now, that's a little bit more difficult to say than what it should be, but, you know, Bob Stoops was on one of the local radio stations this last week and said, you know, look, that win in Dallas was monumental for what this team wants to accomplish this season. And then he said that he doesn't think that this team will have any type of hangover, any type of lax. He said, to quote, you know, you're required to beat everybody, and the only way you beat everybody is to be ready to play every week. There has been nothing that we've seen from Brent Venables this point of his tenure at Oklahoma to make you think that this team won't be focused. I agree with Bob Stoops. I mean, I think standing in agreement with Bob Stoops is probably a smart thing to do in many aspects of life. But in this particular instance, I agree with him as well. But that said, we should still at least mention the fact that there's a possibility that this team could come out flat. This is and they've been vocal about it. This has been a season of redemption for Oklahoma, and there really isn't a lot of motivation against UCF. There's nothing to redeem against these guys. They didn't beat you. They weren't even in the conference when you had your worst year in decades in 2022. So instead of focusing that angst against UCF, I think Oklahoma is going to be looking to send that statement to the voters and other members of the media who've kind of remained vocal about doubting this team, about not buying in on an Oklahoma team that's the only undefeated team in the Big 12. And if you come out in this game and you start flat or you lose interest midway through the third quarter, the only thing it's going to do is further advance that cause of those talking heads. And I think the fourth thing that you want to talk about or watch for in this game on Saturday is going to be, which version of Oklahoma special teams are we going to get? I mean, look, it's a roller coaster ride when special teams take the field for Oklahoma. We've gone through punt returns for touchdowns. We've gone through blocked punts leading to touchdowns or leading to safeties. And then on the flip side, we've gone through missed field goals. We've gone through fumbled kickoffs. We've gone through our own punts getting blocked and leading to scores. It's been a roller coaster. And right now, they're kind of on a downswing after the Texas game. You had the block punt against Texas. You had the missed field goals against Texas. Something's got to come through here and swing them back up. And I think this is going to be an intentional set, an intentional design for Oklahoma special teams to get something going. They're going to come after a punt. They're going to set up something on a kickoff return because special teams are so huge in swinging momentum in a game that you don't want to ride a down wave with that unit on the field. And when you're coming off a game where you missed it, not just a field goal, you missed a crucial field goal and you had a punt blocked, you got to do something for that unit to swing it, to tick it back up. So those are the four things I think immediately comes to mind for me when looking at this game against Central Florida on Saturday. The two running games, what that's going to look like. I think there's going to be a lot of yards on the ground between these two teams. What can Oklahoma continue to do with the red zone defense? Are they going to look flat? Is there going to be any type of hangover following the Red River rivalry? And by the way, that bye week probably came at the most opportune time following the Texas game because it does give you time to kind of digest that victory, to focus on it, to celebrate it more than you could had it just been lining up the next Saturday to play somebody else. So that's probably a good, perfect timing for the bye week. And then the last thing is, what version of the special teams are we going to get? Hey, let's talk about some of the players to watch as well.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Huge news coming in for UCF this week with quarterback John Rhys Plumlee being reinserted as the starting quarterback for the Knights. Yeah, a big deal for their offense because he's the guy that clearly they think makes everything click. But it's not like this offense was stumbling its way through the Big 12. The problem has been their defense. And so when you look at it from an Oklahoma fan's perspective, your first thought is, oh yeah, great. So this team that struggled through the first three games or their Big 12 conference experience is finally getting the guy back that makes everything work for them. Well, the truth is he doesn't. And again, we just spent some time in that first segment talking about how UCF's offense can move the ball, how they can run the ball, and the things that they can do. And when you look at Plumlee's stats, okay, here's a guy, he's completing 67% of his passes on the season, but he's got three touchdowns and four interceptions. And even at that, yeah, he's been injured. I get that, okay? I get that. But at Ole Miss, 52.7% completion rate. Three games. I don't know. I'm just saying it's not like it's one of those end of the world type things. Will UFC function better offensively? Well, maybe. More than likely. But is that going to help them defensively? This is a program that's got the Big 12 worst, 43.7 points per game allowed. They're giving up 490 yards per game. The only team that's worse defensively in yards per game this season in the Big 12 is Houston. Opponents are averaging 6.6 yards per play against this UCF defense, and they scored 15 touchdowns. And that's puts them at or near the bottom in the entire Big 12 defensively. So, yeah, congratulations. You're getting your starting quarterback back in the game. Now, he played a little bit against Kansas, but ultimately was pulled because, I mean, you could see the pain. So he's going to give it a go against Oklahoma, but he doesn't play defense, right? So I think when you look at key players in this game, yeah, for sure. Plumlee being back at quarterback, not a bad call. But there's other issues that he's not going to help with. The Harvey kid running back, 5.7 yards per carry, 6 rushing touchdowns. And then there's Johnny Richardson, 8.3 yards per carry, and he's got one touchdown on the season. This team can run the football. And so I think Oklahoma's linebackers, really Oklahoma's front seven, comes in here and they're on the spotlight this week. Because even through injury, Plumlee's the number three leading rusher on this team. 8.6 yards per carry for Plumlee. He has one rushing touchdown on the season. Now he's only ran 19 times, but again, he's been gone for the better part of three games. But Oklahoma's defensive front is going to have to deal with the mobile quarterback, much in the same way that they did with Emory Jones at Cincinnati. You're going to have to limit downfield options, make him make quick decisions, and keep him in the pocket and funnel everything up the middle. That's the tried and true method. If you listen to this podcast, you've heard me say that over and over and over again against mobile quarterbacks. That's what you have to do. So it puts guys like, your defensive ends, you know, whichever guy out there, Ethan Downs or Trace Ford or somebody else, it's not like what they could do. Why did Ethan Downs have his best game of the season against Texas? Because he could crash. He doesn't have to work on containment. Well, this is a week where he's got to work on containment. He's got to keep Plumlee between the tackles. He's got to keep him in the pocket. So it's going to be really, really difficult for him to crash. Think about, again, going back to Texas. Here's what happens when you crash. Think about Dillon Gabriel and that final drive against Texas. The defensive end, Anthony Hill, comes from the bottom of the play and he crashes down and he misses Dillon Gabriel, who steps up in the pocket. Now he's got options. He can run, which he almost does, until he sees Drake Stoops. Completes the first down of that drive that ultimately led to the game-winning touchdown to Nick Anderson. That's what happens when your defensive end crashes instead of keeping containment on a mobile quarterback. And Oklahoma has to avoid that. So it's going to put guys like Danny Stutzman back in the spotlight. And Danny Stutzman's an okay guy to be in the spotlight, right? I mean, all of Sooner Nation should enjoy Danny Stutzman being in the spotlight. But he's definitely going to be there. I think what you have to figure out with your secondary as well, you know, that cheetah position is going to be huge. And really, it's Desaun McCullough, this could be he had a great game against Texas. And really, since stepping in full time, since Justin Harrington went down, he's been anything but a disappointment. And so I think he's a guy that you might expect to hear his name called a lot on Saturday. And then you got your cornerbacks who are going to be on islands as well at times. Kobe Hudson, 22 catches on the season, 473 yards, 2 touchdowns for the Knights, averaging 21.5 yards per reception. Javon Baker, 21 receptions on the season, averaging 19.9 yards per reception, 2 touchdowns on the season. And then you got guys like Harvey who can catch it out of the backfield. He's got 2 receiving touchdowns on the season. You got 4 guys on this squad that are averaging double figures and have scored multiple touchdowns. And then you got a tight end who pretty much is doing the same thing, but he's only got 9 receptions on the season. But Alec Hollier, 10.4 yards per reception, 2 touchdowns. That's 5 guys with multiple receiving touchdowns. So I think that it starts, again, with Oklahoma's front 7 on the defense. And so a guy like Isaiah Coe eating up blockers in the middle, guys like Ethan Downs containing Plumlee on the outside, and then guys like Danny Stutzman coming right up the middle and cleaning plays up. But that is all made even more difficult because of the running game. Because you've got a guy like Harvey averaging 5.7 yards per carry, because you've got Johnny Richardson averaging 8.3 yards per carry, you can't just come in there, you know, and again, that's what makes, I think, the most pressure in this game is going to be on the defensive secondary. I think the key to winning is going to be what the front 7 does. But the most pressure is going to be on the back end and whether they continue to trust the guys up front, the guys in front of them. And there's been nothing to this point of the season to make you think that trust has done anything but grow. But it's not going to be a cakewalk for Oklahoma's defense on Saturday. Not at all. Now, on the flip side of the ball, I absolutely think this is going to be a type of game where Oklahoma's offense is going to thrive. I think, by the way, I didn't mention Ginter Williams on the defensive side of the ball, but the dude has 3 interceptions and is making plays. So keep an eye on him as well. But all right, back to Oklahoma's offense. I think they thrive. And there's been a lot of people talking about Dillon Gabriel against his old team, and I get that. I don't get the sense that Dillon Gabriel has any angst against, I think that's twice I've used that word on this podcast, but I don't think he has any ill will towards UCF. I don't think Dillon Gabriel's out there to prove himself against this night's defense, and particularly the coaching staff. And there's no chip on his shoulder when facing this team. And if anything, it's more on a very, very micro level, it's more like Oklahoma fans and Caleb Williams. I mean, all the ill will, if there was any, all the frustration, all the betrayal, that lays on the UCF side. Because if Dylan Gabriel's on that side of the field, they're probably not 3-3 on the season. 4-2, 5-1 is more likely. So if anybody has ill will in regards to Dylan Gabriel, I think it's UCF. But Gabriel's been spectacular. 72.3 completion percentage, 1,800-plus passing yards, 16 touchdowns to just 2 interceptions. And that's just what he's done with his arm. When you add his rushing stats in here, you see, you know, he was leading rusher against Texas. He's got 5 rushing touchdowns on the season. He's averaging 4.8 yards per carry, over 200 yards on the ground. Everyone's looking at Dylan Gabriel now. That drive against Texas put Dylan Gabriel on the Heisman map on a national level. On a regional level, certainly on a local level, everyone's talking about, look, if everything goes according to plan – and this turnaround really takes place in 2023, Dylan Gabriel could be a Heisman candidate. After that drive against Texas, he's no longer just a Heisman candidate. He's in position to be a Heisman Trophy front runner. Because you got guys like Caleb Williams just failing on a national stage with the 3 interceptions last week against Notre Dame. I think right now, honestly, I think it's a toss-up. If you had to vote right now through 6 games on the Heisman Trophy winner, it's either the kid, you know, Michael Penix Jr. out of Washington, or it's Dylan Gabriel. And for those reasons, that's going to be the motivation for Dylan Gabriel on Saturday, more than anything having to do with who UCF is and who he used to be for them. So that Dylan Gabriel is absolutely in the spotlight this week. And I can't believe I'm going to say this. I can't believe I'm going to go here. But I think Gavin Sulchuk steps in the spotlight this week. This is a guy, I am not alone in thinking that Gavin Sulchuk should be a more key role in this offense than what he has been. And I get it. It's injury. It's injury related. It's nothing that the coach is like, well, we just don't trust him. We can't put him in there. Blah, blah, blah. It's injury related. I get it. But he was used against Texas. Marcus Majors seemed to be injured against Texas. Tawi Walker continues to be that guy. 4.5 yards per carry on the season. 4 touchdowns. Now, he leads all running back. He's the only running back with multiple touchdowns. That's crazy. Marcus Majors, 1 touchdown. Javonte Barnes, 1 touchdown. Gavin Sulchuk, 1 touchdown. Tawi Walker, 4 touchdowns. 53 carries. Marcus Majors actually has more carries than Tawi Walker, but Walker has more yards and a higher average. He's been the most effective back that the Sooners have. But I think everybody, including the guys in that running back room, want that to be Gavin Sulchuk and not Walker. Not because Walker has failed. Not because Walker's not worthy. He just continues to be that blue-collar guy who does what he's asked to do week in and week out. Huge block. Huge block. Pick up on the block on that touchdown pass to Nick Anderson against Texas. You got to credit Tawi Walker for helping that touchdown happen. But all that said, you see the upside of Gavin Sulchuk. You see the potential there of what he could be, what he should be, if he's healthy. And now he's had a week off. It'll be 14 days from the time he stepped off of the field of the Cotton Bowl to when he steps on the field at Oklahoma Memorial Stadium on Saturday morning. I would expect Gavin Sulchuk to have a season high in carries on Saturday. That's what I expect. Am I going to get that? I don't know. I can't believe I'm still investing time into this running back situation, because all I ever do is say, I give up. I can't figure it out. But here I am. You know, it's interesting. I did mention that Nick Anderson touchdown, which is going to be one of the more iconic plays in the folklore of the Red River rivalry. But, you know, that, he's got six touchdowns, receiving touchdowns on the season. He leads this receiving core that just lost Andrell Anthony. And look, the guy who just peeks at the stats is going to say, well, Andrell Anthony only averaged 15.9 yards per reception. And, you know, you got Jaden Gibson, 26, and Nick Anderson, 25, and Jaleel Farouk, 20. I get that. But the reason why Andrell Anthony only averaged 15.9 yards per reception is because he was beating guys so frequently that they would just rather take the flag than let him catch the pass. Oklahoma has to find a way to replace him. And you've got options. I mean, Jaden Gibson is the prototypical body receiver. Nick Anderson is producing. Dude, he's got 11 catches for six touchdowns. 11 catches, six touchdowns. Over 50% of his catches are scores. But I think Jaleel Farouk is going to have to transition from being that guy that benefited from what Andrell Anthony was doing on the field to becoming that guy who benefits others by what he does. Jaleel Farouk's going to have to step out of the shadow and become the spotlight guy so guys like Nick Anderson and Jaden Gibson can, you know, so they can eat, so to speak. Brennan Thompson, we've only seen him once this season, two catches, 62 yards. That's a pretty dang good average. Is he healthy enough to be the guy who can stretch the field and make defenders know where he is at all times and try to cover him up with the safety? There's got to be options there to replace Andrell Anthony, and there are options. But the question is, who steps in to be that guy who lets others thrive and move in his shadow? I think it's Jaleel Farouk. So there you have it, offensively, defensively, some players to watch in this game for Oklahoma and UCF. I got a score prediction and a couple of closing thoughts, maybe some game predictions as well.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, so legitimate question here to open up this final segment of the Sooner Nation podcast. Who's the third best team in the Big 12? I mean, if you think about it, the way the standings are right now, Oklahoma clearly the best team in the Big 12. 6-0 on the season, 3-0 in conference play, the only undefeated team that the conference has to offer thanks to last or 2 weeks ago with the Red River rivalry. Now, according to the standings, Iowa State is your second place team in the Big 12 at 3-1. And then Oklahoma State and Texas are at 2-1, Kansas State 2-1, West Virginia 2-1. I think of that lot, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Texas, Kansas State, and West Virginia, I'm taking Texas as the second place team in the Big 12. And I don't think I have to argue very hard to make that pick. But who's the third best team? Could it be Oklahoma State? Could it be Iowa State? Kansas State? I think West Virginia is probably the one that you look in that group and you think, eh, we were believing in you until last Saturday. that loss to Houston is just mind-blowing. And I think that's what's going to resound in people's heads when they try to logically think through this. So I think easily West Virginia is the one out. But then also Kansas State, they lost to Oklahoma State. I don't think you can make an argument that they're better than the Cowboys because they lost. I mean, think about all the grief we're giving people for insinuating that despite losing to Oklahoma, Texas is still somehow superior to Oklahoma. That same concept applies to Oklahoma State and Kansas State. So I think because of that, you got to put the Wildcats on the outside. So then it comes down between Iowa State and Oklahoma State as who is the third best team in the Big 12. And the reason I think that's really interesting to me is because these are two teams that, I mean, about a month ago, we kind of had them left for dead, did we not? That South Alabama loss for Oklahoma State, oh, these guys are done. Iowa State with the whole gambling saga and losing players and not knowing who's eligible and having to find a new running back and a new quarterback, all that as the season's starting, oh, these guys are done. So now you beg the question, are these two teams exceeding expectations on such a high level? I mean, is it such an exponential result that we're just blown away, we can't figure it out? Or is the Big 12 a dumpster fire? And there really are no good teams. UCF and Cincinnati are your two winless teams in conference. Welcome to the Big 12, boys. Houston picks up its first win. BYU has a win. But you've got five teams in the Big 12 with just one win or no wins in conference play. You've only got two ranked teams in the Big 12 with Oklahoma and Texas, and they're both top 10, which kind of carries the banner, but that's what these two teams have done for decades is carry the banner. So it's like you have two top 10 teams and then just a bowl full of garbage after that. So the question is, who is the third best team in the Big 12? But then I think the sub-question to that is going to be, does it really matter? Can any of these teams challenge Oklahoma and Texas at this point? And if I feel like each week it looks less and less likely that the answer to that question is going to be yes. So that, just curious for your thoughts. You can hit us up on Twitter at Sports Heartland. Love to know kind of what you're thinking on that. Let's break down one more thing on the Oklahoma Cincinnati, the Oklahoma UCF game. And I'm going to give you five predictions, and then I'll give you what I think the score is going to be. All right, here we go. Five predictions in no particular order here with Oklahoma and UCF. 11 a.m. kickoff on Saturday, Central Time, ABC broadcast. Here's five things that I think are going to happen in this game. And again, I'd love to know your take on it, whether you agree, whether you disagree. If you got something that you want to say, this is my prediction for the game. It can't be like Oklahoma wins. That's my prediction. No, that's got to be like more detailed. For example, the first thing I got happening here, I got Dylan Gabriel accounting for over 400 yards of total offense. And I think, yeah, that's a no-brainer. You're like, wow, Matt, you're really swinging for the fences on that one. But here's the thing. I mean, when you look at the potential that this game has, it is likely – there's a high probability that Dylan Gabriel doesn't play a complete game, that we get some Jackson Arnold time in here into the fourth quarter, and so therefore he's not in the game for its total. But I think between passing and running, and I don't think this is the game where they want him to run a lot, but I do think between passing and running the football, Dylan Gabriel is going to account for 400 yards, and he needs to because of what we said earlier about the Heisman Trophy race. It is on. I mean, we're middle of October now. This is crunch time for that Heisman Trophy race. So you every weekend, I mean, he's got his moment. Every Heisman Trophy winner has that moment. You had good stats, you had good numbers, but what was your moment, right? So he got that. He got that in the biggest game of the week last week in the Cotton Bowl. But now he's got to continue to get those stats and that efficiency. 400 plus yards for Dylan Gabriel. That's prediction number one. Prediction number two. It's not a positive prediction, but I think Oklahoma's defense gives up a rushing touchdown. They've only done that once this season. It came against Texas in the sixth game of the season. I think in the seventh game of the season, we see them allow a rushing touchdown again, back-to-back games. And I'm not being a downer on Oklahoma's defense by any stretch, but I think the odds are, when you look at how this offense works for UCF, I think they're going to run the ball. They're going to run the ball for multiple reasons. They're going to run the ball because it's their best way to move it. They're going to run the ball because it keeps that clock grinding down. They're going to run the ball because that's what they're good at, and they want to protect their quarterback because they've seen what happens when he goes down. I don't think Oklahoma shuts them out by any stretch of the imagination. I think UCF scores, and I think they score multiple times. Now Texas scored 30 on Oklahoma. That was the most Oklahoma's given up this season. Iowa State scored 20, which is the second most. I'm not going to give away my prediction just yet, but I think UCF is right in the middle of those two. But the bottom line is, I think Oklahoma's defense is going to give up a rushing touchdown on Saturday, which would only be the second time this season that it happens. Assuming they only give up one, you know. I don't want to turn into an onslaught of rushing touchdowns, but I think this is a weekend where we see it happen. And I don't think there's going to be any shame in that either. All right, so number three, I'm shooting for the moon here for sure. I think Gavin Sawchuk rushes for 100 yards. In fact, I think Gavin Sawchuk may have his season best in terms of yards per carry, rushing yards, and touches. But I also think he potentially has a career game on Saturday against UCF. And again, I've already said it. I can't believe I'm still this much invested in Oklahoma's running back situation. Well, you got a team that's 6-0, ranked in the just barely outside the top five, which is a little bit of a farce. They should be in the top five. And I'm nitpicking running backs, and because it's totally working with Tyway Walker. But there's just so much there for Gavin Sawchuk that you just gotta feel like, at some point, the stars align, and this kid has his coming out party, and we thought that was the bowl game against Florida State, but because of injury, he's not been able to build on that. And I'm not going to go as far as to say that, like, if it doesn't happen, that I'm just going to quit. I'm not even going to ever mention running backs again, because clearly I have an addiction here that I can't get away from it. But I probably am going to substantially back away. I'm not going to go full on who cares, but I'm going to go maybe 3/4 of the way to who cares on that. But yeah, Gavin Sawchuk, 100 yards plus rushing on Saturday, with his best game of the season, potentially best game of his career. That's prediction number three. Number four, Danny Stutsman is going to lead Oklahoma in tackles on Saturday. Now, hold up. He didn't lead the team in tackles the last time they took the field. That was on Jaron Kanick. In fact, I think Danny Stutsman was third in that game. in tackles. So it's not like this hasn't happened. I think it's the second time. I think the Arkansas State game to open the season, I think. There's been another game where he didn't lead the team in tackles, but I think it was Arkansas State because he didn't play the entire game. But I think he comes back to that spot. By the way, midseason All-American Danny Stutzman. All right, we can't just call him Danny Stutzman anymore. It broke earlier today before I recorded this podcast. Midseason All-American Danny Stutzman. Guys, he is in line for the Budkiss Award, the way he's playing. And he may be playing himself into the NFL early. They're going to have to do, if this season, the last half of the season continues like the first half of the season did for Danny Stutzman, you look at guys, and there have been guys since Brent came that are just like, yep, we're out of here. We're going to the NFL. And they didn't, like it wasn't time. Like, you're like, why are you going to the NFL right now when you should be? Eric Gray. Eric Gray is a good example. But, this could be the guy that has earned the right to jump into the NFL early. And it's always such a bittersweet place to be in because as a fan of the team, as a fan of the program, as a fan of the kid, you want what's best for them. But then you look at it and you think, man, look at the progress from year one of Brent Venables to year two of Brent Venables. What could another year do for this guy? But he's going to have to make a decision. I think he's definitely going to have to make a decision. And, I don't know that if you're the head coach, I don't know if you are the defensive coordinator or the linebackers coach, which, Brent's kind of all three of those. I don't know if you call it a recruiting job to try to get him to come back. I think the recruiting is trying to keep people out of the portal. But if a guy's earned his right in the NFL, if he's earned the opportunity to go a top three draft round, you sit down and you honestly think, you say, hey, what else can you gain from being here? And I think he can gain more from being in Norman for another year. But I think we're maybe starting to look at the end of Danny Stutzman at OU based on the way he's playing right now. And obviously, for all the goals that this team has this season, you want that level of play to continue to be what it was, if not increase. So I got Danny Stutzman leading the team in tackles on Saturday. And here's my fifth prediction is that this defense is going to get two takeaways, at least two takeaways. That's been a staple. It's been a theme. It's been what they do. Gentry Williams had a fumble recovery and an interception against Texas last game out. There was another interception against Texas. So that was three against the Longhorns. I think they get at least two against the Knights on Saturday. And you got to just got – I mean, I don't want to spend a lot of time looking out west at what's happening in Los Angeles. Other than just to sum it up by saying – sure is good to see what's happening here. Because the things that were preached by the former regime were not things that played out on the field. And in fact, we talked earlier when the four things to watch, whether this should be a hangover here or not. Well, the previous regime, you kind of had to worry about a hangover. That you worried about focus, whether this team was focused or not during that regime. They preached turnovers. They didn't really produce a lot of turnovers, but they preached them on the defensive side of the ball. Can they make that happen? Well, now you're actually seeing it. You're seeing focused week in and week out, and you're seeing a defense produce turnovers. So I say they keep doing that, and there's more than one on Saturday. So there you go. There's my five predictions. Dylan Gabriel, 400-plus yards, total yards of offense. Oklahoma's defense will allow a rushing touchdown on Saturday. Gavin Salchuk's going to hit the 100-yard barrier. Danny Stutzman is going to lead this team in tackling, and the defense is going to produce at least two turnovers. That leads us to the final score. Again, I told you about the matchup predictor. ESPN has Oklahoma with a 94.1 percent chance of winning this game. The Sooners are a 19-point favorite. The over-under is at 66 points. You know what I do here, right? And I did pick Oklahoma last week against that spread as underdogs. I see, keep saying last week against Texas. I picked Oklahoma as underdogs with that spread, and they won. But I think that's the first time this season I've picked Oklahoma with the spread. I'm not going to make it a second time with this game. I think Oklahoma wins this game, but I don't think they win by 19. I think UCF, by the way that they're able to run the ball, having Plumlee back, is going to make some things happen to where this game might, if you're a scoreboard watcher, it might appear to be close, but it's really not. I've got Oklahoma winning 36-24 over Central Florida, 36-24, which would put you right at 60 points, which is under that 66-point total. And I want to be wrong. I've been wrong. I've never, this season, I don't believe I've picked Oklahoma to cover as a favorite. I don't think I've picked them once, and they've covered every time. So let me be wrong again, and I'll be happy about it. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in to the Sooner Nation podcast. You can hit us up online, heartland-sports.com. You can find us on X, Twitter, whatever they call it these days, at Sports Heartland. Enjoy your weekend. It's approaching quickly. Boomer Sooner, everybody.